Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to 2016. For those of us who are political junkies, political nerds, political geeks, man, oh, Manischewitz, 2016 is like Christmas and our birthdays all rolled into one. And also, welcome to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I am Becky Noble. Thank you, everyone, for being here on this very first edition of Conservative Cauldron Radio of 2016. And, of course, the chat room is always open, so you can go in there and hang out. Or you can call in here. The number is 347-857-2620, 347-857-2620. Wow, like I said, those of us who are political junkies, we're ready to roll, baby. We're ready to rock and roll. It's 2016. We've been waiting for a while, and it is here. And we are, what, roughly 3 weeks away from the first votes being cast in this presidential election cycle. And, as things have progressed and gone on since people have made their announcements that they are running and things of that nature, you know, this has been anything but a normal election cycle. And I think if the past year has been, you know, unconventional and weird, and things have happened that nobody would ever thought would have happened, you know, wait until we get rolling here in 2016, because I think it's going to get even more. I think more rules will be broken, more conventional wisdom will be set aside, and just more things that you never thought you would see in a presidential election are going to happen. You know, whether that is due to the presence of Donald Trump or, you know, who knows. But before we get into that, of course, we've got a lot of presidential candidate news to get into. And I've got some poll numbers and things like that. What I want to get into first is, of course, this week really has kind of been the week of guns and gun control. And it started out earlier this week with President Obama giving a speech on gun violence and what most conservatives, most Republicans see as more attempts at gun control. And there's so many things involved here. And, you know, I'm going to say from right off the bat that I'm not a gun expert. And so if I say something here that is inaccurate or wrong, please let me know and I'll correct it, because even though I do not own a firearm, I am very much in favor of one. I am probably going to be looking into getting one in the near future. Even though I do not own one at present, I am right up there as one of the staunchest supporters of the Second Amendment that you will find. And I think that while most conservatives, we believe in common sense things like doing background checks on people, trying to keep firearms out of the hands of people with mental illness issues, and people like the convicted felons, people who don't have any business owning or being in possession of a firearm. But we want to do these things balanced with normal, law-abiding, good American citizens who happen to be gun owners. You want to balance that out with their rights, because ultimately, you can like I just said, you know, we want to keep guns, we want to keep firearms out of the hands of people who don't need to have them. But the Second Amendment is right behind the first one for a reason. And the majority of conservatives and Republicans, and even people who aren't, people maybe who are apolitical, but who enjoy their Second Amendment rights and are legal law-abiding gun owners, don't have a lot of trust in this administration that they do not want to curb people's Second Amendment rights in any way they can. And so on Monday of this week, we had President Obama making a speech where he announced that once again through executive order, that he has broadened background checks. The executive order was to expand background checks to cover more guns sold at gun shows, and that mythical air quote gun show loophole that really doesn't exist, and trying to you know, he's going to tell you that he wants to curb all of these mass shootings, and he wants to get again, he's on the same page as all of us. He wants to get those firearms out of the hands of people, convicted felons, people with mental health issues, those people who have no business having a weapon in their possession. Law right now, federally licensed gun dealers must conduct background checks on buyers. But a lot of people who sell guns at flea markets, over the internet, maybe you buy a gun from a friend or a family member or a neighbor, there are those people are not registered as firearms dealers, therefore they don't go through the Obama administration's argument is that these people do not go through the again, more air quotes, stringent background checks that you would if you were a licensed gun dealer. And so there has been some executive action on that. And well, during the president's speech on Monday of this week, he has this has all been done in conjunction with Attorney General Loretta Lynch. And also, in an attempt to prevent gun purchases from falling through the cracks, because one of the things here is that all of the things that have been proposed or all of the things that have been signed into executive order by the president here wouldn't have done a damn thing to stop the San Bernardino shootings, wouldn't have done a damn thing to stop the Sandy Hook shooting, wouldn't have done a damn thing to stop countless other shootings that have happened in this country. But this is also going to include the FBI hiring 230 more examiners to process background checks. And the FBI has a computerized system, of course, that is state-of-the-art and can process background checks for many people in a matter of seconds. I would say maybe that might be where a problem comes in as well. And also, it says here, this is a report I have that is from Monday of this week from Newsmax, that the White House also said it planned to ask Congress for $500 million to improve mental health care and pledged to move forward with efforts to keep guns out of the hands with people deemed unsuitable because of mental illness. And that's the thing. That's the one thing that every single one of these people, maybe you can leave out the San Bernardino shooters, because we know that there was a completely other motive there. We know that that was a terrorist motive there. But every single one of these other shooters, Virginia Tech, you can go as far back as Columbine, Sandy Hook, Aurora, Colorado, every single one of these, the one thing that these shooters had in common was mental illness. Well, in light of all of these executive orders and executive actions, I believe what I saw and heard last night was that the funding for the improving mental health issues, that's going to be tabled for a while. Isn't that special? Because we all know that you know it's the guns that are doing this. It's not the people with mental health issues. It's the guns. And earlier this week, when all of this was rolled out by President Obama and his administration, he made a speech from the White House on Monday. And, well, he got a little emotional. And let's hear what he had to say.
Our unalienable right to life and liberty and the pursuit of happiness, those rights were stripped from college kids in Blacksburg and Santa Barbara and from high schoolers at Columbine and from first graders in Newtown. First graders. And from every family who never imagined that their loved one would be taken from our lives by a bullet from a gun. Every time I think about those kids, it gets me mad. And by the way, it happens on the streets of Chicago every day. So, all of us need to demand a Congress brave enough to stand up to the gun lobby's lies. All of us need to stand up and protect its citizens. All of us need to demand governors and legislators and businesses do their part to make our community safer. We need the wide majority of responsible gun owners who grieve with us every time this happens and feel like your views are not being properly represented to join with us to demand something better.
You know, I'm so happy that President Obama mentioned all of the gun violence that takes place every day in his hometown, in his home city of Chicago. And, you know, how many times do we hear, you know, we get a body count of how many people were gunned down and murdered and wounded in Chicago every weekend. And so it's, you know, really nice of him to mention that this takes place every weekend in his hometown. But this is the first time I've heard him doing that. And it seems as though that this was just a convenient moment for him in which to do it. And, you know, many people are scoffing and poo-pooing the crocodile tears from the president. I was one of them. Because there are a lot of things that have gone on in this administration. I don't want to get too far off track here, but that the president maybe should have gotten emotional about, but instead he was worried about being late for his tea time. We've had the beheading of Americans, the beheadings of American citizens in the Middle East, and they have been shown in gruesome detail on YouTube videos. And we have not seen the president get emotional about that. We had a woman in San Francisco by the name of Kate Steinle, who was murdered by an illegal immigrant who had been deported 5 times, who never should have been in this country in the first place. No tears were shed for Kate Steinle or her family, who was murdered by a man who never should have been in this country to begin with. We've never seen the president shed any tears about 4 Americans who were murdered in Benghazi, including a United States ambassador, because even though they begged for security and even though they begged for some backup, consulate there and the CIA annex were being attacked, no help came and no one listened to them. No tears were shed for them either. Instead, the president, again, like I said, was worried about whether or not he was going to make his tea time or not. So it's interesting that he has the time and the wherewithal in this case to shed tears about gun violence and bring up the violence that occurs every single day in Chicago. And also last night, I did not see any of it. I've seen bits and pieces of it. The president held a town hall style meeting. It was broadcast on CNN and hosted by Anderson Cooper. And there was some interesting moments there as well, because actually, to CNN's credit, there were a lot, just as many pro-gun people, I think, as there were, gun control advocates. So it seemed like, I'm thinking there probably was a few more gun control people than there were NRA members, but, at least they were there. But the thing is that when the NRA was brought up and it was asked of the president, where was the NRA at this town hall meeting? Why weren't they there? Well, here's what he had to say.
There's a reason why the NRA is not here. They're just down the street. And since this is the main reason they exist, you'd think that they'd be prepared to have a debate with the president.
They haven't been to the White House for years.
We've invited them.
So right now, tonight, you're saying you would be welcome to meet.
We have invited them repeatedly.
So just so I'm clear, tonight you're saying you would welcome to meet with the NRA.
I've said this repeatedly. I'm happy to meet with them. I'm happy to talk to them. But the conversation has to be based on facts and truth, and what we're actually proposing, not some imaginary fiction in which Obama's trying to take away your guns.
Well, let's talk about what you're proposing.
The reason, by the way, that the gun sales spike, not just before I propose something, every time there's a mass shooting, gun sales spike. And part of the reason is that the NRA has convinced many of its members that somebody's going to come grab your guns, which is, by the way, really profitable for the gun manufacturers. It's a great advertising mechanism, but it's not necessary. There's enough of a market out there for people who want protection, who are sportsmen, who want to go hunting with their kids, and we can make it safer.
So that's what President Obama had to say during the town hall meeting last night that was broadcast on CNN about why representatives from the National Rifle Association were not in attendance there. And what he had to say there in that clip was not altogether true. Later on, after this town hall meeting last night, Chris Cox, who is the head of the wing of the NRA that they deal with legislative issues and things of that nature, and he went on with Megyn Kelly last night, and what he had to say was that the president was right, that they were absolutely invited to this town hall meeting, but they were invited to ask one question that had been pre-screened. So if you are representatives from the NRA, why would you go to a town hall meeting in which you were not allowed what you wanted to ask, why you were not allowed to ask the question of the president that you want to ask, that you're given some pre-screened question in advance? And so, of course, the NRA was not there. And Chris Cox also went on to say that that they, whether or not the Obama administration has invited the NRA to the White House, I don't know about that. They may have. But the feelings of the NRA and the representatives of the NRA is that why should we go to the White House when we want to have a blunt, honest, fact-filled conversation with the president and his administration about gun ownership in America? And that may come from the NRA, but it's not going to come from the Obama administration, because they're going to keep making up these facts and figures that they trot out. And so really what Chris Cox was saying to Megyn Kelly is that it's really at this point a waste of time for anyone from the NRA to go to the White House to try to have a conversation with this president about this issue. Because, first of all, there is no, yeah, gun sales do spike every time that the president makes a speech like the one he did this week. And because people know, you know, President Obama likes to speak a lot about transparency, that his is the most transparent administration ever. Well, yeah, it's very transparent in the fact that we have seen, and now that the fact that he's a lame duck, he's got a year to go, he is free to do whatever he wants. And he told us 8 years ago that he was 5 days away from beginning the transformation of America. So we know what his agenda is. He doesn't have to tell us. Oh, he's going to tell us that that's not what it is. Nobody's coming to grab your guns. But there may not be anyone physically knocking on your door, standing on your front porch, coming to get your guns. But we know that a good portion of the agenda of this administration and this president is to make it much harder for people to purchase firearms and to make it much harder for people to defend themselves. And so he's, you know, while he's thinking that he's the smartest guy in the room, he's not. Because, and that's really, you know, he can go on all day about how it's all the NRA's fault and how they don't want to have a meeting with him. But the reason they don't want to have a meeting with him is because they know who he is and they know what he is about, and they have his number. They know what his agenda is, and it is not to help and not to assist the NRA. I'm going to take a quick break here. We're going to come back. I got a few more sound bites. Taya Kyle was at this. The widow of American sniper Chris Kyle was at the town hall as well last night. And she had a few things to say to the president, and we will get into that. Plus, of course, like I said, lots of presidential election politics. So don't go away. I've got tons more stuff to get into. We're just getting into it. Happy 2016, everyone. Happy New Year. Thanks for hanging out with me and for listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I will be right back. Oh, look, it's January 8th. Happy birthday, Elvis.
You ain't nothing but a hound dog. You're crying all the time. You ain't nothing but a hound dog. Crying all the time. Well, you ain't never put a rabbit and you ain't no friend of mine. Well, they said you was high class. Well, that was just a lie. Yeah, they said you was high class. Well, that was just a lie. Yeah, you ain't never put a rabbit and you ain't no friend of mine. You ain't nothing but a
Conservative Cauldron Radio. I am Becky Noble. Like I said, the weekend is upon us, and Happy New Year to everyone. I hope everybody had a wonderful, fantastic, and safe Christmas and New Year's. And here we are in 2016, baby. We're ready to rock and roll. I know that everybody who is, all of us who are political junkies, political geeks, political nerds, we've been waiting for 2016 for quite a while now, and now it is here. And it's so exciting for us. For a lot of people, yes, it is like watching paint dry, but That's what happens when you are a political junkie, political nerd. We love it. We are talking about president's executive orders this week on expanding background checks and doing some other things here to, well, basically make it harder for law-abiding American citizens to purchase and obtain firearms. And because we all know that, it's not the person behind the trigger with that gun who is committing the crime. It's the gun itself, right? Yeah. But, you know, one of the things I heard somebody say this week was that when we hear this president talk about gun control, and when I say gun control, it for sake of this discussion here, I'm using it in a very broad general sense. Because we know ultimately for the left that's what the ultimate it's what the ultimate goal, it's the holy grail for them, is gun control and if they can possibly swing it, gun confiscation. But one of the things that we never hear from this president and from this administration is about how we're going to get guns out of the hands of criminals. How are we going to get, because we all know that the guys in the inner city standing on the street corner, they're not going to the gun store to buy guns. They're not going through the process. We never hear about how are we going to keep firearms out of the hands of those guys. How are we going to keep firearms out of the hands of gang members and things of that nature? People who have no other agenda other than crime. So we never hear about that. We only hear about how we can make it harder for law-abiding Americans to purchase guns, and for whether it's for protection of their homes, their properties, their families, their loved ones, whether it's for hunting, no matter what it's for. And like I said before the break, Taya Kyle, who is the widow of American sniper Chris Kyle, former Navy SEAL, she was in attendance at this town hall meeting last night. And she kind of, in a way, she brought up what I'm talking about. And she talked about the murder rate dropping. And I'm gonna let Taya speak for herself here. Here's what she had to say to the president.
We're at an all-time low for murder rate. That's a big deal. And yet I think most of us in this country feel like it could happen at any moment. It could happen to any of us at any time. And I'm almost finished just when you talk about the NRA and after a mass shooting that gun sales go up, I would argue that it's not necessarily that I think somebody's going to come take my gun from me, but I want the hope, and the hope that I have the right to protect myself, that I don't end up to be one of these families, that I have the freedom to carry whatever weapon I feel I need, just like your wife said on that farm road. You know, the sheriffs aren't going to get to my house either. And I understand that background checks aren't necessarily going to stop me from getting a gun, but I also know that they wouldn't have stopped any of the people here in this room from killing, and so it seems like almost a false sense of hope. So why not celebrate where we are? I guess that's my real question is,
well,
celebrate that we're good people, and 99.9% of us are never going to kill anyone.
Well, let me make a couple of points. First of all, thanks to your husband for his service, and thank you for your service, because extraordinary heroism that he and your family have shown in protecting all of us, and I'm very grateful for that. Number two, what you said about murder rates and violent crime generally is something that we don't celebrate enough. The fact of the matter is that violent crime has been steadily declining across America for a pretty long time. And you wouldn't always know it by watching television, but overall, most cities are much safer than they were 10 years ago or 20 years ago. Now, I challenge the notion that the reason for that is because there's more gun ownership, because if you look at where are the areas with the highest gun ownership, those are the places in some cases where the crime rate hasn't dropped down that much, and the places where there's pretty stiff restrictions on gun ownership, in some of those places the crime's dropped really quickly. So I'm not sure that there's a one-to-one correlation there.
So, first of all, the fact that the president thanked Chris Kyle for his service and thanked Taya and her family for their service, because we know that the service is not just undertaken by the person in the military. It's also undertaken by their families. And my first thought when I heard him say that was, you know what, I'll give him that one. Whether or not this was just for photo op purposes, whether or not it was sincere, you know, we don't know. So the fact that he did that, in this case, I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt and say, you know, that it's better late than never, considering the fact that Taya Kyle never got a phone call from the president when Chris Kyle was killed, in a way that, again, Kate Steinle's family never got a phone call when she was murdered. But yet Michael Brown's family had lots of phone calls. But that's another topic for another day. But, you know, the fact that he seemed to agree there with Taya Kyle about the murder rate, and, you know, here's the thing, is that the national murder rate may have gone down. I don't know. I don't have the statistics in front of me. But let's look at some cities here and their crime rates. And we can start right here in St. Louis. There were 188 murders in St. Louis last year. 188. You can look at places like Detroit, New Orleans, New York, Baltimore. Pick a city. Pick any city, basically, that is run by Democrats, that has been run by liberals for decades, and there really isn't a drop in the crime rate. In fact, it's spiked. In last year in Baltimore, for instance, not counting the whole mess with Freddie Gray, but the aftermath of that, the crime rate soared in Baltimore. And it didn't look to me like anybody was very worried about it. Again, here in St. Louis, and a lot of people, I think, call this the Ferguson effect, because it also has to do with the fact that police are not, I don't want to say they're not giving it their all. They do. They go out and they risk their lives every day to keep us safe. But none of them want to become a YouTube video, and who can blame them? They all have families. They all have you know, they all have lives just like you and I do. And, you know, in places like Baltimore and New York, as soon as they get out of their car, people start up the cell phone video. And they can't do their job like that. So there are places where, again, maybe the national murder rate has dropped. Again, I don't have numbers in front of me. But you look at places, like I said, right here in St. Louis, and again, I could rattle the cities off again, but in all of those places have been run by liberal Democrats for decades, and they're all of the same mindset that if we get guns out of the hands of law-abiding citizens, and they're not going to come out and say that word for word, but that's what it is. But they're not doing anything about the gangbangers on the street corner. Those guys aren't going through the background checks. Those guys aren't going to the gun store. And you know, it's things like that where you have community organizers who, you know, will go on TV and be interviewed. And really all they want, in a nutshell, is for taxpayers to throw more money at the problem. Oh, we need more jobs. We need more community centers. We need more... You've all seen the interviews. You know, you can rattle off all of the things that they think will help, you know, and what it ultimately amounts to is just throwing more money at the problem. So, you know, maybe it's a broader problem than we can even talk about with crime and the murder rate and things like that right here, in the fact that it's about the people who live in those cities. It's about the leaders that they elect. And it doesn't seem like that those leaders really have done them any favors for decades. And so I think that's probably something that you could address too in a much broader general sense. But, you know, I don't think that this is it's not over. It's just the beginning because here's the thing. Barack Obama has a year to go. He has about, what's today, January the 8th. He has about a year and maybe, I'm looking at the calendar right now, maybe a week to go, week and a half, a little over a week and a half. And if people think that the last 7.5 years have been bad, this last year, 2016, is going to be the last 8 steroids, because he knows he doesn't have a lot of time. He knows he doesn't have a lot of time left for the fundamental transformation of America. And I think that we are going to see things. I said to somebody the other day, I think that 2016 is going to be one of the scariest years in American history. And that would be why. Because the man in the Oval Office knows he doesn't have a lot of time left to enact his agenda. And he wants to get it across for his legacy in a bad, big, bad kind of way. And I think I would say, and a lot of us maybe would say to our fellow travelers in the conservative movement, hang on, buckle your seatbelts, because it is going to be one bumpy ride. But moving on, we, of course, have presidential election news. I have a report here from the Washington Post, and this is from Tuesday of this week, and it is about a rally that Donald Trump held in Lowell, Massachusetts. Now, think about that for a minute. Massachusetts. What do people usually think of Massachusetts? Well, you think, you know, it's a very, very blue state, lots of liberal Democrats. And the building that this rally was to be held was able to hold 8,000 people. And local officials were estimating that it was going to be filled at the very least to capacity or beyond. And it was 29 degrees on Tuesday in Lowell, Massachusetts, and there were people waiting for hours outside in line to get into this. And, you know, I don't know. Donald Trump has been the front runner now for what, the past 7 months, since he announced his run for the presidency. And piece by Chris Saliza, who is no conservative Republican. What he goes on to say is that that crowd size is certainly no indicator, because you know, you can look at Bernie Sanders, and he is running 15 to 20 points at least behind Hillary Clinton in the polls. I'll get to those numbers in a couple minutes, but yet he's drawing 20,000-25,000 people per event. So again, while that crowd size is certainly not an indicator, but again, as with everything with Donald Trump, I don't think that you can ignore. And the Republican establishment is, well, they're trying to ignore it, but they're ignoring it, but they're not ignoring it because they want Trump to go away. They want Trump to go away. They want Ted Cruz to go away. And so they're out there enough to try to get them to go away, but they're really not. But if they ignore what is going on among conservatives and among Republicans right now in this country, they do so at their own peril, and they are really and truly are committing political suicide. I believe that. Many other people believe that as well. And a lot of things that people are beginning to see, too, in Donald Trump supporters is that they are seeing, and I'm assuming maybe that this is then when a lot of the polling takes place. You get a phone call and it's a pollster, you know, somebody from Joe Blow polling, and they're asking you questions about who you're supporting. And what they're finding out is that a lot of those people are Reagan, what was dubbed Reagan Democrats back in the 80s, back during Ronald Reagan's election over Jimmy Carter, and again in 1984. You had those people who were dubbed Reagan Democrats, and those were the people who, they weren't the hardcore lefties that you see today in the Democrat Party. They were union members. They were, you know, maybe a lot of people might describe them as more center left, not hardcore left. And those people are starting to show up. And that's another thing I think that you are not going to be able to ignore. But one of the things that Donald Trump brought up this week, and for myself personally, I don't think it's a good road for him to go down. And that was the issue of whether or not Ted Cruz, who's coming up right behind him in the polls, whether or not Ted Cruz is eligible to run for the presidency because of his citizenship. For anybody who doesn't know, and I think everybody knows now, that Ted Cruz was born in Calgary, Canada. His mother is an American citizen, and his father was Cuban. And, you know, the legal scholars are all over the place on TV and the internet explaining why he is, in fact, eligible to run. But what happened here is that the reason that Donald Trump brought this up is to create some doubt. Donald Trump knows beyond the shadow of a doubt whether or not Ted Cruz is eligible to run for the presidency. He knows he is, but what's going on here is that if you raise enough doubt and if you get enough people talking about it, that's what you want. And, you know, the fact that John McCain was born in Panama, and so that came up during his run for the presidency, but he was born in the Panama Canal Zone, which was a territory. So therefore, that was American soil. Barry Goldwater, who ran for president in 1964, Barry Goldwater was born in Arizona, but he was born in Arizona before Arizona was a state. And so that was also an issue. So this is really not the first time that this has come up. But what is brilliant about this coming from Donald Trump is that if he brings this up and enough people hear him and enough people who aren't tuned in politically are not tuned in as much as political junkies and political geeks are, that they are going to question this and they are going to want to know what's going on with it. And so really from a campaign standpoint, from a strictly political standpoint, it is kind of a good move on the part of Donald Trump. I just don't think that ultimately it's not a good move overall. It's not a good road for him to go down, because when it gets settled once again, when the whole issue gets settled once again that Ted Cruz is eligible, I think there's the chance that Donald Trump can look. And also, too, if Ted Cruz keeps rising in the polls, I believe the last thing that I saw was that he was 5 points up in Iowa with, 26 days to go. If his poll numbers keep rising, you know, this may become more of an issue and Trump may talk about it a little bit more. But Ted Cruz really isn't the only one that has problems either. You know, Hillary Clinton has a few problems of her own. Before I get into that, I was talking about poll numbers. Let's see what the most recent from Real Clear Politics poll numbers that I have as of this morning is that over Ted Cruz by about 15 points. Trump is at 35.3, Cruz an even 20, Rubio 11, Ben Carson 9.7. Chris Christie 4.7, Jeb Bush 3.3, Rand Paul an even 3 points, Carly Fiorina at 2, John Kasich 1.7, Mike Huckabee 1.3, Rick Santorum 0.7, and Lindsey Graham and George Pataki, of course, have dropped out. But so he's still holding a sizable lead over Ted Cruz. But if that lead continues if the gap continues to narrow, this issue may still be around, that Trump will keep it alive. And also here, latest Democrat nomination polls here from Real Clear Politics. Again, Hillary Clinton has a 21-point lead over Bernie Sanders. We have Hillary Clinton here with 53, and these are all national numbers. Hillary Clinton at 53.3, Bernie Sanders an even 32, and Martin O'Malley at 3.5. So, and I just saw this morning where at the next Democrat debate, Martin O'Malley might not even be on the stage. So, and you know, that's really no surprise. We know where that's going. But Hillary Clinton is having problems of her own in the fact that, her husband's escapades of the 90s, shall we say, may be coming back to haunt her. I'm going to take another quick break here. I will be right back. We will talk about that. And I have another thing here about we haven't heard a whole lot about the standoff in Oregon over the grazing rights and the fact that that militia groups they're growing in numbers. That you know, people might think that these guys are just kind of fringe kooks, but maybe not. But we'll talk about it when I get back. You're listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. Don't go anywhere. We got tons more to get into. TGIF.
You know I can be found sitting home all alone. If you can't come around, at least please telephone. Don't be cruel to who heart is true. Baby, if I made you mad for something I might have said, please don't forget my past. The future looks bright ahead. Don't be cruel to who heart is true. I don't want no other love. Baby, it's just you I'm thinking of. Don't stop thinking of me. Don't make me feel this way. Come on over here and love me. You know what I want you to say. Don't be cruel to who a heart is true. Why should we be apart? I really love you, baby. Cross my heart. Let's walk up to the preacher and let's say I do. Then you'll know you'll have me, and I know that I'll have you. Don't be cruel to who heart is true. I don't want no other love. Oh baby, it's just you I'm thinking of. Don't be cruel to who heart is true. Don't be cruel.
We're back. You're listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I am Becky Noble. Thank you so much for hanging out with me today. TGIF people, the weekend is upon us. First weekend, well, New Year's weekend, I guess, maybe was really the first weekend of the new year. But, okay, so it's the second. The second weekend of 2016. And, of course, here at Conservative Cauldron Radio and many, many other places, we are so happy that 2016 has arrived. We are ready to rock and roll, people. So, of course, we're talking about some presidential politics here, talking a few poll numbers here. Of course, on the Republican side, Donald Trump is still in the lead. And I know I've heard a lot of people say it, and I agree with it, that I think they're still waiting for Trump to screw up somehow. They're still waiting for him to implode. And with about, 3 weeks to go here in Iowa, I don't think that's going to happen. And I've said to a lot of people, too, that, we're watching all these crowds, and Trump is getting – he was, I believe, last weekend down in Biloxi, Mississippi, and he had 30,000 people in an auditorium. Again, if you are the Republican establishment, if you are the guys at the RNC in Washington, if you ignore that, that's utter insanity, just complete and utter insanity. But, while you have all of this support for Trump, and you could even maybe argue it with Hillary, too, because, Hillary may not be the shoe-in that everybody thinks she is, especially if there are some indictments coming her way, and that remains to be seen. But all of the support for Donald Trump is great, and I'm not endorsing anyone at this point. But what has to happen here is that all of this support and all of this passion and all of this excitement about Donald Trump has to transfer into votes. And, that's what we'll see. Once the voting gets underway in Once the voting gets underway in Iowa, in New Hampshire, in South Carolina, once it all starts rolling and real actual votes start coming in, you know, we'll see. The picture will be a lot clearer, and it will continue to get clearer. But while Donald Trump is bringing up whether or not Ted Cruz is eligible to run for the presidency, and I believe it's been settled. I believe that he is. But again, if Ted Cruz's poll numbers keep going up, I think that Trump's going to try to keep that issue alive, and maybe a lot of other people. But Hillary Clinton has some problems of her own. And here's the thing, is that there are a lot of people, a lot of millennials, who are all excited about Hillary Clinton, but these are the same people who either hadn't even been born yet, they were very young children, weren't paying attention, whatever the situation may be, to what was going on back in the 90s with the Clintons, when Bill Clinton was president, and all of his, what's that word, peccadillos? I like that. It just sounds so, ooh, you know. But a lot of the women who were who accused Bill Clinton, maybe not just of sexual harassment, sexual assault. Juanita Broderick accused Bill Clinton of rape in 1999, and a lot of those women are coming forward now, saying that Hillary Clinton has no business running on the "I am woman, hear me roar, therefore vote for me for president" card. And because what a lot of people don't know about, and the list of women is long, it's extensive. And what also a lot of these young people don't know is that there were, back at that time, there were a lot of guys who were Arkansas state troopers when Bill Clinton was the governor of Arkansas, whose task it was to go find friends for Governor Clinton. And they had come out and said that was their job. And so a lot of these women are coming out now, and they are bringing back up what Hillary Clinton's role was during Bill Clinton's presidential campaign. She was the head of the Bimbo Eruption Unit. She was the one who, when all of these women would come forward and talk about what Bill Clinton did to them, she was the one that was supposed to smack them back down and destroy them so that they would go back to wherever it was they were and not make any problems for her husband. And, you know, the mainstream media is also going to help her in order to do this. But what needs to happen is, you know, maybe it's not a pretty thing that Republicans want to do, but, and I said this again to someone else earlier this week, 2016 is a year like nothing that we have ever seen before. And I think that we are going to have to do things that maybe we normally wouldn't do in any other election cycle, because it's that serious and the stakes are that high. And I think that Republicans need to keep these stories front and center, because Hillary Clinton doesn't have any business running on the women's icon card. She is not a champion of women's rights, not all women. She is not a champion of all women who have dealt with sexual assault and rape in the past. She obviously is not. And all of these women have come out on multiple occasions talking about Hillary Clinton's tactics and what she did, what the things that she did to make them go away and shut up. And if she's going to do that to a few women here and there who have accused her husband of sexual assault, what is she going to do to her political enemies? What is she going to do in any given case should she become president of the United States? It's a chilling thought. But also very quickly here, we haven't heard a lot of talk about what's going on here in Oregon about the cattle ranchers. There were two father and son who were convicted of arson, I believe back in 2001. They had part of their grazing lands were federal land, and there were some wildfires that happened, and they started some break fires in order to keep the wildfires from coming onto their property and their grazing lands. And some of those fires got out of control, and they were sentenced, I believe, the father to 3 months and the son to a year. And they did their time and got out, but now a judge has decided that they need to report back to prison to serve up to 5 years, both of them, for these crimes. And so a lot of the a lot of militia type groups have shown up in Oregon to show support. The people in this town in Burns, Oregon, don't want them there. The sheriff has asked them to leave, and it's something that we'll have to get into at another time. I think that a lot of people maybe believe in what they're doing. They've just kind of picked the wrong issue and the wrong environment maybe in which to do it. But the Kansas City Star, this is a report from the Kansas City Star, that that the militia movement is kind of growing. And one of the reasons you haven't seen a lot of law enforcement presence, I think, in Oregon is because the federal government absolutely does not want another repeat of Ruby Ridge or Waco, Texas. But, you know, anytime the Southern Poverty Law Center is involved, I'm a little curious, a little suspicious about it, but they identify 276 militia groups across the nation, 37% more than the 202 groups that were identified in 2014. Heidi Byrich, director of the Law Center's Intelligence Project, said, quote, "When the federal government was stopped from enforcing the law at gunpoint, it energized the entire movement." And she was talking there about the Clive and Bundy Ranch incident back in 2014 in Nevada. But so according to, and she also goes on to say, quote, "It's bigger than anything we've seen before, and it's not simply a resurgence of the 90s militia movement. It's different in many ways. Now it's much broader because people have a lot more information that they can go to, and they have a lot more information sources that they can go to, and they realize all of the things that they are not being told by their government and by the mainstream zombie media." But that's another something that we'll have to get into on another show. It's interesting because if the Kansas City Star and other newspapers, maybe liberal newspapers, are talking about it, then you know, I'd like to explore it a little further and really see what's going on here. But very quickly, before I have to get out of here. Drinky the robot. You don't have to drink alone anymore, people. It can listen to your troubles without judgment while occasionally nodding and giving you a thumbs up. It can clink glasses with you as if you're actually drinking with another person. Even better, the liquor it drinks heads straight to its jar stomach, which you can recycle. The Brobot was created by South Korean inventor Yunshan Park, who was suddenly struck by loneliness while drinking on his own in Christmas of 2012. "Drinking alone was definitely terrible," the man wrote in his YouTube video description. He continued, "I put an extra glass in front of me and poured soju, the most popular alcoholic drink in his native country, into it. I cheered by myself with a glass of soju as though there was someone in front of me. The secret of taste of alcohol totally depends on existence of a partner. This is why I made this robot." Don't feel bad for Park, though. He most likely didn't celebrate Christmas 2015 alone, since Art Center Nabi, an art museum in Seoul, supported his little robotics project. The bad news is that Drinky the Robot isn't being mass-produced, so you'd have to find or build one on your own. So there you go, people. You don't have to drink alone anymore. There's Drinky, although you'll have to build your own version of Drinky. With that, I am out of here. Thank you, everyone, for hanging out with me today. Please go to theblacksphere.net, Kevin Jackson, theblacksphere.net, myself, and lots of other talented people. I have a new thing up there today, so please go check it out. TheConservativeCauldron.blogspot.com, Facebook.com/BeckyNoble, and on Twitter at PatriotWitch. Everyone have a fantastic weekend, and I will see you next time.